devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Trinadapi Sunichena. Charad Iva Sahishnuna. Namanina Manadena. Kirtaniya Sadahari. Haryanama. 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 Iva Kivalam. Kalo Nastyeva Nastyeva. Nastyeva Gatiranyata. Vanchakapatrubhyascha. Kripasindubhyayavacha. Patitanang Pavanebhyo. Vaishnavebhyo. Namo Namaha. Welcome everybody to the 9th day of our Bhagavad Gita seminar. Currently we have 15 devotees online viewing on Mayapur.tv. Let us all say Hari Bol. So tonight we're going to study chapter 14 and 15. Do you have those sheets? 14 and 15. Because I printed for tomorrow. So come back and get 14 and 15. Because tomorrow I'm not going to have time to print, so I printed tomorrow's as well. So come and get 14 and 15. Sorry about that. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. When you're all ready, make sure it's 14 and 15. So, Shekhar, we will be one chapter short because we're not going to have time to do 18. Tomorrow we'll do 16 and 17. It's not going to work. We can only do two chapters, and 18 is big. Okay. Let's worry about today. All right, so tonight we're studying chapters 14 and 15. If you're ready to proceed, say Hari Bol. All right, chapter 14 has 27 verses entitled The Three Modes of Material Nature. Verses 1 through 5 is entitled Fundamental Principles to Understand the Modes of Nature. And I have selected three main verses. Follow along. The total material substance called Brahman is the source of birth. And it is that Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the births of all living beings, O son of Bharat. Here, Krishna is referring not to himself directly, but to two expansions of himself. When there is a complete cosmic dissolution, when living entities are not fit to go back to Vaikuntha, they have to go somewhere. So they enter the body of Mahavishnu and they sleep for a breath of Mahavishnu, which is millions of years. When Mahavishnu exhales, all the living entities come out, but Mahavishnu glances at Durga, the material energy. That glance becomes Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva then engages in sex with Goddess Durga, and in that act of sex, all the living entities who were in Mahavishnu enter the material universe's energy. So, that's why if somebody says, Lord Shiva is the father of the universe, yes, that's okay. I just explained how he is. But we also understand that he's simply the glance of Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu is an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of the speaker of Bhagavad Gita. And we will learn in the next chapter who our real father is. I won't spoil the fun. Text number 4. It should be understood that all species of life, meaning 8,400,000, according to the Vedas, there are 8,400,000 species of life. Only 400,000 are human, small percentage. And of those that are considered human, a smaller number can be considered civilized. And of the civilized, a small number are known as Aryan. Not what Hitler thought. No, we studied Aryan in chapter 2 when Krishna said to Arjuna, you are talking like a non-Aryan, Arjuna, because you are lamenting as if you don't know the value and purpose of life. That's an Aryan. We discussed that on day number 2. An Aryan is somebody who knows the purpose of life, which is self-realization. That's an Aryan. Not what Hitler thought. Somebody blue eyes, blonde hair. That again, bodily concept of life. Krishna does not deal with the bodily concept of life. An Aryan can be any color. It's somebody who follows the rules and regulations of the scriptures and has as the primary goal, self-realization in their life. Okay, we continue. So in verse number 4, Krishna is the seed. Okay, it should be understood that all species of life are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. So even though I explained Mahavishnu, the living entities, before they were in the material universe, before they were in Mahavishnu, we're in the spiritual world. That's where we come from. That's why in the next chapter, Krishna will make it even clearer. But here he is saying, I am the seed-giving father. Okay, so that's the main point here. Krishna is the seed-giving father of all the species of life. Number 5, make sure you get chapter 14 and 15. Get the right sheet. 14 and 15. All right. 14 and 15 is tonight's sheet. Okay. Material nature consists of 3 modes. Goodness, passion, and ignorance. So it's not all one. There are 3 different tracks in this material world. When the eternal living entity, where did you learn that? That the living entity is eternal. Where did you learn that? Students? Tanya, say, chapter 2 is where you learn that the living entity is eternal, non-material, immovable. Remember that? We had that discussion about immovable. Right. Okay. So, when the eternal living entity comes in contact with nature, he becomes conditioned by these modes. I'll give you a good way to understand it. When you come in contact with a virus and your body can't defend it, what happens? You get sick because you've come in contact. All right? So when you come in contact with these modes, unless you're transcendental, you become under those modes. Very simple. You're either under the modes or you're above it. You're either sick or healthy. Okay, let's go now. Next section, verses 6 through 18. A comparative analysis of the 3 modes of nature. And I included practically this whole section because all Krishna is doing in this chapter is just stating the facts. This is a chapter that is simply, you should take the information, apply it. So let's look at verse number 6. O sinless one. So who is O sinless one? Arjuna. Very good. The mode of goodness, being purer than the others, is illuminating and frees one from all sinful reactions. So that's why Prabhupada stipulated 4 regulative principles of freedom. You follow those 4 principles, you can be considered sinless. That's the mode of goodness. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge, because it's still material. The mode of goodness is still material. Okay, you become conditioned, meaning accustomed to material happiness and material knowledge. That's the inference here. You become accustomed. Let's welcome the now 22 devotees online. Everybody say Hari Bol. They love it when you do that. They've sent me emails and they say, we love it when the audience recognizes and welcomes us. Okay. So you become conditioned. That's a theme here. Regardless of the mode, you become conditioned. Okay. Verse number 7. The mode of passion, born of unlimited desires and longings. So now you see what it means to be in the mode of passion. Unlimited desires and longings. And because of this, the embodied living entity is bound to material fruit of actions. Because unlike God, if you want something, you have to go and get it. God is different. Krishna thinks of something, bam, it materializes. Wouldn't that be great? Yes. But we're not God. And especially in the material world, you have to work hard. And even when you work hard, you don't necessarily get it. What did we learn yesterday? The super soul is what two things does the super soul do? Yes, permitter and overseer, because sanctioner is the same. Overseer, so, and we will, well, we won't learn unless we have that class. On chapter 18, the fifth factor is super soul. When he says yes, then you are successful. When he says no, try as hard as you like. If he says no, it doesn't happen. Okay? So, when you're in the mode of passion, you become bound because of these desires. You have to work hard for it. You can't help it. But we see billionaires. They have a billion. Now he wants two. If you had a billion, well, maybe you would. I don't know. But it seems, right? That is the folly. It's never enough in the material world. I remember, not the big boss, but my immediate boss when I worked in Westwood, Jewish guy. He used to, and he knew I was a devotee. Every month or so, he'd come into my office and he'd say, Nick, because that's my legal name, Nick, I don't understand it. I'm making $90,000 here at this company. He was the chief financial officer. And his wife, he said, she's making $100,000. And there's no money in the bank. See that? And he had this big, big house in Brentwood. And he used to tell me all the time, he'd come in lamenting. He was a big lamenter. He was always whining about something. And so he said when him and his wife first got married, they had a little apartment in Santa Monica. They were so happy. And he said one day he walked and he said, Nick, my wife just redid the whole kitchen and spent $1 million redoing the kitchen. $1 million. See, that's why there's no money in the bank. That's why he was complaining. There's not. So, hearing him speak and working in this office was teaching me everything that Prabhupada and the Bhagavatam and Gita say. I was hearing it directly from the so-called horse's mouth. That they're making almost $200,000 a year and they're not happy. And then came the sad day. He walked in and he was crying. His wife at the dinner table, they had just finished eating chicken. She got up, dropped dead. Just like that. There were no, just died at the dinner table, left behind two young sons, 8, 9 years old. Just like that. They had everything. Right? Life, a house in Brentwood, two big dogs. And when he would say, how come you guys, you don't eat cow? And I would say, the reason we don't eat cows is the same reason. Would you like it if I killed and eat your dogs? And he'd say, no. And that's why we don't eat cows. You love your dogs, we love cows. I never heard a peep out of him after that. Because he got it. Because you know, in America, man's best friend. What's a dog's life in India like? It's getting better? Okay. But you all know the cow is worshipped in India because you have understanding. Okay, that was a diversion. Let's get back. Everybody chant. All right. Number 8. O son of Barak, know that the mode of darkness born of ignorance is the delusion of all living, embodied living entities. The results of this mode are madness, indolence, and sleep, which bind the conditioned soul. So he's just outlined what is happening when you are under the influence of certain modes of nature. These are the symptoms. So like a doctor, you can always analyze, I'm having these feelings. Now I know if I'm being influenced by goodness, passion, or ignorance. Verse number 10. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance. Sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance. And at other times, ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way, there is always competition for supremacy. The morning hours, mode of goodness. That's why even Krishna himself, to teach us, would get up before sunrise. The 1.5 hours before sunrise is the most auspicious time of the day and the best time for spiritual practice. Then as the morning turns to mid-morning, then the mode of passion is coming. By noontime, mode of passion is in full swing. Then as the afternoon, we get closer to sunset, ignorance comes in. Like that. So that's one way of looking at these modes of nature. Okay? But within the day, even there are different changes. The manifestation of the mode of goodness can be experienced when all of the gates of the body are illuminated by knowledge. O chief of the Bharatas, when there is an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruitive activity, intense endeavor, and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. And when there is an increase in the mode of ignorance, darkness, inertia, madness, and illusion are manifested. So symptoms. Now, look what happens. When one dies in the mode of goodness, he goes to the pure higher planets of the great sages. Those are above the demigods. Indra and the demigods live in the upper planets. But above them are the planets of the great sages and rishis. Brahmaloka, Siddhaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka. This is all explained in the Bhagavatam. Planets, yes, we've been referring to this picture a lot. Very good picture. Then below them are the planets of the demigods, headed by Indra. He's the king of the demigods. Then we get to the middle region, Earth. Then below the Earth, the 7 planetary systems, Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Patala, we go deeper and deeper down. When one dies in the mode of goodness, he attains the pure higher planets. When one dies in the mode of passion, he takes birth among those engaged in fruitive activities. That's Earth. Earth is the place where you do fruitive activities. So that's what happens. You stay in the mode of passion, come back, take another birth. Go ahead. And when one dies in ignorance, he takes birth in the animal kingdom. So we mentioned in chapter 2, let's see who remembers. Anyone who answers this question gets a star. What was the greatest danger? What did we learn in chapter 2 is the greatest danger? Who remembers? Besides me. Does anybody remember what was the greatest danger? All right. I will tell you once again. But remember for next time. The greatest danger is missing another opportunity for spiritual advancement. Can an animal make any spiritual advancement? Nope. Can a human being? Yes. So the greatest danger is your next birth, you lose the opportunity for spiritual advancement. If you take birth as an animal, you may have to wait so many lives, and then eventually again you'll become. Now you can continue. If you take a human birth or higher, then you have more facility. And even in human birth, right? You know, I've told you hundreds of times, when you take birth in an Indian family, you have maximum opportunity. And if you take birth in a devotee family, you have the mucho maximum opportunity to complete your self-realization. Just like your granddaughter, right? She's taking birth in a devotee family, yes? Yes. So, and she has grandparents are devotees. So that child is coming from a very, very auspicious start. Now if she takes full advantage, she can finish up her business and go back home, back to God in this lifetime. Yes? There you go. There you go. There you have it. Confirmation. Let's give it a bell. All right, let's continue. Text number 18. Those situated in the mode of goodness gradually go upward to the higher planets. Those in the mode of passion live on the earthly planets. That's what I just said. Krishna confirms it. And those in the abominable mode of ignorance go down to the hellish worlds. And tomorrow, when we discuss chapter 16, we'll see how Krishna has a hand in that. He plays a role in that. We'll see what he says. All right. Last section of this chapter. Transcending the modes of nature, because whether it's goodness, passion, or ignorance, you're still conditioned. You're still a prisoner. You're still shackled. That's the idea here. Elsewhere, Prabhupada comments, how is it that we are shackled? Because we're free to move about the country, according to that airline. We're free to move about the country. Southwest, you must have heard their commercial. So, how am I shackled? Yes. Good. But the way Prabhupada explains it in the Bhagavad Gita, the real shackles is sex desire. That's the shackle. The attraction we have for the opposite sex, that's sufficient to keep us bound here forever. There it is. So, transcending the modes of nature, part of it means transcending the attraction for sex life. This is also mentioned by Rishabhadev when he's preaching to his 100 sons. Rishabhadev, yes, sir? Oh. You're alive. Kundan just had a big car accident, so wrong sheet. Wrong sheet. That's tomorrow's sheet. So, you came out okay. All right, let's bless Kundan. Everybody, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Jai. So, Shabadev was telling his sons that this attraction, male and female, that's the strongest knot to keep you bound up in this material world. That has to be cut. Look what Kunti says. Sever my tie of affection for my family and friends. This also ties in with the concept we've been hearing every night. Unalloyed devotion. Doesn't Krishna, we have been hearing that night after night. Unalloyed devotion. Complete devotion to Krishna. All right, let's study this section. Transcending the modes of nature. When the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, because the modes have no effect on the soul. The soul is always a loop, but it does have an effect on the body. Now, the problem is the soul is attached to the body. That's the problem. And that's why we experience happiness and distress. You take away the soul's attachment to this material body, it's like waking up from a dream. Let's see what my producer says. We're up to 32 devotees. Say, Hari Bol. They must sense it is a good night tonight. When the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses, and enjoy nectar even in this life. This is the whole idea of spiritual life. Even Jesus said, how does Jesus say it? In this world, but not of this world. Or something like that. The concept is, a self-realized soul may live in the material world, but is, did I say it right? Thank you. A self-realized soul may be in the world, but is transcendental. For me, when I heard and saw Prabhupada, that's when the concept became clear. That here is a person, he's walking, he's talking and doing so many things, but he did not look or act like anybody I had ever seen, and still haven't seen since then. So this is the whole, we have this phrase, Jivan Mukta, liberated even while living on the earth. Jivan Mukta. They may look like an ordinary person, but their consciousness is completely different, and they enjoy nectar, amrit. And that's why Lord Chaitanya says, Purnamrita Swadanam. When you chant the Maha Mantra, you are tasting Purna Amrita, full nectar. What people are enjoying in the material world, what is that song? Tata Lasai Kati Vadi Bindu Sama. I think that's a line by, who's the author of Ram Manasa Charita? Tulsidas. I believe that's his line. That material happiness is just a drop of water in the desert. In a desert, will a drop of water satisfy you? It's a tease. You want buckets of water. So, sense gratification in the material world is a drop of pleasure. But Lord Chaitanya says, I'm giving you a taste of full purnamrita svadanam. I will give you a taste of full nectar. That's why he says, chant the Maha Mantra, everybody. And the more you taste that mantra, then you're enjoying nectar in this life. Let's go to the next verse, 26. Oh, here's a verse, top five. Text 26, top five verses of Bhagavad Gita. Now, I didn't include it, Haribo. Go ahead, take, there's only one sheet left. Not that one, that one. Oh, we still got more. Big crowd tonight. The rain brought you all. Very good. Immediate seating is available in the lodge section. Okay, so in this section, very similar to what Arjuna said in chapter 2, if you recall, I'm not going to ask you because I know you don't recall. Arjuna in chapter 2 wanted to know the symptoms of a transcendental person. Oh, Tanya studies her Bhagavad Gita. Come to the head of the class, please. Move your rocking chair. Very good, Tanya. Excellent. There's one sheet left, Ramban. On the yes. That's it. Anybody else comes? Anyway, Jai. Haribo. So yes. So in very similar way, Arjuna in this chapter says to Krishna, what are the symptoms of someone who has transcended the modes? And more important, how does someone transcend the modes? Because we just explained the mode of goodness conditions you to this, passion to this. But I don't want to be conditioned. I want to be free, like Martin Luther King wishes he were. I want to be free at last. So that means, how do I become transcendental? Verse 26 is the answer. This verse is in the top five. Please listen with rapt attention. One who engages in full devotional service. Ding, ding, ding. Neon lights. Is this the first time we've been hearing this concept? Krishna has been mentioning it all along. Here it is. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, not just on Sunday, right? All circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and comes to the level of Brahman. The actual Sanskrit, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. That level of Brahman is the same level of Krishna. Krishna is always on the level of Brahman. Krishna is never under the modes of nature. Let's see if any Tanya. If somebody says to you, you should know because we've studied this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, don't let me down. If somebody says that Krishna becomes conditioned by the modes of nature, what do we call that person? Rascal, right? Mayavadi, atheist, Pashandi. Because that means that person does not understand who is God, who is Krishna. By definition, even if he comes to this world, he's still transcendental. Any other conception? Wrong. Hellish mentality. Very bad. So this level of Brahman, you also can achieve full devotional service unfailing. Now, in the same understanding, this is what Lord Chaitanya told Sanatan Goswami in this context. When Lord Chaitanya was teaching Sanatan Goswami, he said, Sanatan, when a person takes initiation from a bona fide spiritual master, Krishna accepts that person as good as himself. Same concept. But you have to stay on the platform, engaging in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances. That's what it means to be Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, on the same platform as Krishna. Final verse of chapter 27, and it's a big one, another top 10 verse, number 27. And I always like to say, don't be spiritually dyslexic. Listen. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. If I was spiritually dyslexic, it would say the opposite. But Krishna, because it would say the impersonal Brahman is the basis of Krishna, which a lot of people think. I'm sure I've met them. I've met such people, right? But here it's clear. Krishna says, I am the basis. Just like the example. Does the sunshine produce the sun, or does the sun produce the sunshine? Thank you very much. The sunshine is the impersonal Brahman emanating from Krishna's body. Brahma Jyoti. Jyotirmayi. Right? So, Krishna's body, like the sun, is emanating this effulgence, not vice versa. So, what is this Brahman? It's immortal, imperishable, eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. This is spiritual happiness. Material happiness has a beginning, middle, and end. This Brahman, ultimate happiness, immortal, imperishable, eternal. Yes. Yes, yes. Here we're talking about Brahman, the Brahma Jyoti, the all-pervasive spiritual, like we used to say in the old days, the white light. Okay? We have just completed chapter 14. We will now go to chapter 15, which is a very nectar chapter, the shortest chapter in the Bhagavad Gita. Short and sweet. Until then, let's just do a quick bhajan. Are we ready? Thank you very much. Your presence has fired me up. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janna Vallabha Girivarat Hari. Yashodanandana Vraja Janna Ranjana. Jamuna Chira Vanna Chari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bolo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this chapter 15, some people, they prefer this chapter over all the other chapters. There's a certain class of devotee, they feel that this chapter 15 is the best. So it's called Yoga of the Supreme Person. Verses 1 through 6, understanding reality and its perverted reflection. In verse number 1, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, It is said that there is an imperishable banyan tree that has its roots upward and branches down, and whose leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas. So Prabhupada, actually, the very first book that I got was entitled Transcendental Teachings of Prahlad. And the cover picture was this verse. It showed at the top Radha and Krishna living in the spiritual Goloka Vrindavan. Then under that was a lake, and the lake was called Desire. And in the reflection of the lake was exactly this, an upside down banyan tree. The tree was where Radha and Krishna were standing underneath. But because it was being reflected in the lake, the reflection was opposite. Because when you stand, it's exactly like this. It's upside down. What should be at the top is at the bottom. So Krishna is saying, this is the perverted, what we see here is a perverted reflection of the reality. Because it's a reflection. A reflection is not the real thing. The real thing is what is giving off the reflection. Verses 3 and 4. The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. And the best way I explain detachment is a coin or a kartal, two sides. Detachment has to have two sides. Detachment from material sense gratification, and the other side, attachment to Krishna's service. Both have to be there. You have to be attached to Krishna's service and detached from sense gratification. Let's welcome 34 devotees online. Hari Bol. Let's see if we break our record of 53. So keep that in mind. You want to be detached? Become attached to Krishna. That's the best way to become detached. The more you're at this life, you're coming night after night after night, that automatically means you're getting detached from other things. You're becoming attached to Bhagavad Gita. Like Shekhar told me at the end of last week, that you have now become accustomed to this nightly program, have you not? Yes. That means you're developing attachment for Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. Very good. So Krishna may have arranged your broken leg just to, I don't know. He may, I don't know. All right, let's continue. Thereafter, one must seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns, meaning here. One never returns here. And there surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, that's talking about the reality, the spiritual world. We should surrender. Because once you surrender and go, you don't return here. From whom everything began and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial. We read in the Chatushloki, Amsavasya, everything emanates from me, Krishna said. Everything emanates from me, both material and spiritual. Same concept. From whom everything began and from whom everything has extended. Number 5. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. So Bhagavad Gita is teaching us how to surrender to the Supreme Person. We've been studying it every night, and I've been especially pointing out all those places where it is telling us how to surrender to attain the eternal kingdom. And then that supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Why? Everything is self-illuminated. Those who reach it never return to this material world. So, are you ready to say goodbye to your Belinda once and for all? Or do you still want to come back? Because if you take up this Bhagavad Gita seriously, say goodbye to Hollywood. Say goodbye to it. So you have to become convinced, yes, no more. I am ready to go to Krishna's abode and never return. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Now the next section, understanding the position of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul is the opposite of a liberated soul. I mentioned this previously, it's worth repeating. A conditioned soul has four inherent defects. Cheating, imperfect senses, tendency to make mistakes, and easily falls into illusion. Those are the four inherent defects of a conditioned soul. A liberated soul doesn't have those four defects. So, the living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Previous chapter, Krishna said, I am the seed-giving father. Correct? You remember that in the previous chapter? So this goes even further. We are part and parcel of Krishna. Meaning, we're not this body. Ooh, where did you learn that? Chapter 2 was the first lesson. So, since we're not this body, where are we coming from? We're coming from Krishna. We are all children of God, each and every one of us. That makes us equal. Regardless, man, woman, young, old, black, white, American, it doesn't matter. The souls are all equal souls. They all have that's how we get this concept, God the Father. It's right here. My eternal, fragmental, eternal, and eternally fragment, meaning, forget this idea that you're going to become one with God. You're eternally fragment. You may not like it, but you're eternally an individual person. So you better get to like who you are, because you are who you are forever. So you may not like who you are. That's all right. That's your material who you are. But once you become a pure devotee, you will like who you are, because that's who you are eternally. So like me, don't freak out when you look in the mirror, because that's not who you are. You are real who you are, you haven't seen yet. That day is coming. And that real who you are is so beautiful and cute and lovable, because Krishna made you that way. That's who you are. So that day is coming. Stay the course. Stay the course of Bhagavad Gita. Everybody chant the Maha Mantra. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. Welcome to material existence. Krishna uses the word karshati, struggling. And what is the struggle? My mind and my five knowledge acquiring senses: eyes, ears, nose, tongue, sense of touch. The Bhagavatam explains the conditioned soul is like a husband who comes home to six wives. So one wife is pulling, come here, do this. The other wife is, no, come here, do this. One wife is pulling this leg. One wife is pulling this. I don't know how some people can do it. There's some religions, they have seven wives. Oh my God. I can barely handle one. One is pulling the head. You're being pulled in six different directions. Bhagavatam says that's what's happening. Because your five senses and your mind are all demanding, do this now. Do this now. That's why when you become a yogi, you tell your mind and senses, shut up. We're going to do what I say. Now we're going to concentrate on Krishna. Now we're going to chant Hare Krishna. I'm not going to do what you dictate, eyes or nose or tongue or mind even. My mind is my biggest problem. Therefore, Bhakti Siddhanta used to say, when you get up, beat your mind with shoes 100 times. First thing in the morning, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Right. Get that mind under control. And before going to bed, get that broomstick out and beat your mind again. Hey, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Get the senses and mind under control. Next verse. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. I mentioned this before, but this is what happens. At the time of death, the soul, right now the soul is covered by the subtle body, mind, intelligence, ego. When the soul leaves this gross body, that subtle body stays with the soul, goes into the next body. So your mind, intelligence, and ego has been around for millions of lifetimes. That same mind, intelligence, has been around long, ever since you began your material dream. Ever since you began your material dream. Alright? So here it is saying, carrying different conceptions of life. That's how the different conceptions of life are carried from one body to the next. You're just continuing whatever desires and aspirations you had in this life that are unfulfilled. Eventually you're going to get another opportunity in the next life, depending on how pious you are. That explains very clearly why we see child prodigies, right? At the age of 5, they can play Mozart concerto. Because they picked up from the previous life. And the same holds true for those of you who are continuing your spiritual life. All your sadhana, all your bhakti is carried on to the next life. As soon as you get an opportunity, bam! I've seen it. I've seen it all these years I've been preaching with the Indian community. You guys are the easiest to preach to. All I got to do is this. I just have to scratch a little bit and immediately you guys take off. I just have to say the right key words, encourage you, enthuse you, and you're off flying. This is easy. Trying to do it with others, oh my God. Like Prabhupada said, it's like trying to wash coal. You got to spend so... I take the easy road. You guys are easy. I just have to do certain things. But all I got to do is scratch and you blossom. That's why I love you. I love you because I see in each and every one of you, you are devotees. You're all devotees. And my art is, all right, I see the devotee and I see what's getting in the way. Okay, let's get that out of the way. so that the real devotee can come out. Is that all right? I am an expert physician. Yes, sir. Man is known by the company he keeps. That's why I've said so many times, you are my family. On the internet and here, you are my family. My wife always cracks a joke. Hey, you love those Indian people more than your own family. Yeah, it's true. Everybody chant the Maha Mantra. Yes, sir. No, it's covering. It's covering the soul because it's material. It's material. The soul has, okay, this is a good question. The soul has its original mind, senses, and intelligence, but that's covered. It's covered by this material body, and it's covered by the subtle material body, the material mind, intelligence, and here in this case, false ego. It's a covering, just like a glove. The glove looks like the hand, but it's not. You take the glove off. Oh, so the glove for the soul is this subtle material body. Is that good? Is that, you want me to go further? Go further. Yes, that subtle body, all the experiences, remembrances, desires, stay. Just like you've seen it. Say the computer got a problem. So sometimes they take that hard drive, put it in a brand new computer, same stuff is there. So everything is there in the random access memory, right? It's all there. So all your life experiences are deep, deep within. Yes. Yes. Well, you can't work on it. You can't. It's there. But because of the body, you're extremely limited. It's still there. But because of that body, you're not able to access what you could have accessed as a human being. But everything's still there, stored. Just like Bharat. Bharat was unusual, but we'll use Bharat. As a deer, Krishna gave him a special blessing that you will know that you're a deer. That was special. Normally, when we take the body of a deer, we don't know that we're a deer. But that mind, intelligence, and ego is still there. It's just that the body does not allow you to exhibit it or access it. Once you become a human being, now you've got facility. Another way to explain it. When you drive a bicycle, you can go so fast. When you have a Porsche, it's a big difference, right? So demigods, they have Porsche-like bodies, right? And when you are in the animal kingdom, you've got bicycle bodies. And when you have human beings, you've got Toyota bodies. So, like Prabhupada says, when a living entity is a dog, he has to act like a dog. That's what it means to be conditioned. Okay? In the example of a ghost, this is what a ghost is. A ghost is a soul covered by a subtle body with no gross body. Complete frustration. Because in order to fulfill desires, you need a vehicle. So a ghost is somebody with a DUI. License has been revoked. So the soul wants to do things, but needs a body to do it. That's why ghosts try to take over bodies. And what kind of bodies do they take over? Bodies that are under the influence of tamogun. That's why so many people in Skid Row, homeless people, especially if they're under a lot of intoxication, They become ghostly haunted because the ghost can easily try to take over a weak individual, not somebody who's strong. Okay? Good enough? Thank you. Everybody chant. Your question has brought us up to 38 people online. Haribo! Okay, the living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. So, even in human life, the bodies are different. Okay? So depending on the body, as it says here, you get a certain kind of senses. And with those senses, you have different tastes and desires. Very, very easy to understand. When you go to certain countries of the world, you'll notice that that particular type of person is attracted to a certain kind of music, a certain kind of food, a certain kind of lifestyle. Where is that coming from? Because of their previous desires, God has given them a particular kind of material body, and they are naturally attracted to those things. So, I've seen it in my travels around the world. You go to some countries in Latin America, the eating habits, the music that they like, and just the different values that they have are different than America. And Indian tastes are very much different. Very, very much different. You have a particular... This verse is explaining. You have a particular gross body with a certain kind of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch. It's different than other human species. Okay? It's different. Different. And I'll tell you a good story. One time, one of Bhakti Siddhanta's disciples, somehow or other, either in the Philippines or some country, right? They were using ghee. And all the neighbors complained, "What's that smell? Ugh!" Now, well, how do you like the smell of ghee? It's beautiful, isn't it? When my wife makes ghee, I feel like I'm in heaven. It just makes the whole... But these people, because of what we're reading in this verse, their senses made them react to ghee. All right? Where I live, right? Where I live, there's over 400 apartment complexes. So in my apartment, we have Asians, Indians, and a few Americans. Okay? So I always know who's cooking. Okay? Because Indians cook a certain way, and you can smell it. And then when the Asians cook, I gotta close all the windows. It is so bad. It is like, gag me. Because they have a different, this verse, different type of senses. And they think it's nectar. Right? I come from Italian background. Now, my mother didn't cook typical Italian. But I remember when I would go to my aunt's house, right? The way she would cook, she's cooking that stuff again. Because they have different senses, right? A lot of you, maybe not, there are some Indians, they have to have chilies, yes or no? Right? You do that with somebody else, and it's like, no way. It all has to, same with music. You appreciate a certain kind of music. Let's go, let's take this tambura sound, or let's take Prabhupada, and we'll go to South Central LA. We'll put it on a big speaker. How long do you think will last? What do they want to hear?
Yo, bravo. Ooh, ooh, kill cock. Ooh, wait.
It's a completely different mode of nature. Right? So it all has to do with that particular material body with those set of senses given to them. Right? When I go to Panama, especially this one place, Colón, right? So it's either the 1st or the 15th, once or twice a month, is when all the sudras get paid. And you always know when the sudras get paid because you can't sleep at night. Because all the bars are filled and everybody's dancing and they play this loud music and I'm trying to get rest. And they're just wailing and howling till 3 o'clock in the morning. And they're just going mad. They have those kinds of senses. Different senses. All right, enough of that. The living entity thus taking a certain, which is good to, enjoys a particular sense of, okay, we did that. All right, 12 and 14. 12 to 14. Vibhuti. The splendor of the sun, which dissipates the darkness of this whole world, comes from me. So that's the meaning of Om Bhur Bhuvah Svah. Right? That ability of the sun is coming from Krishna. He is the original light. And the splendor of the moon and the splendor of fire are also from me. I enter into each planet and by my energy they stay in orbit. This is something Prabhupada would talk about. This planet is very heavy, is it not? Yet, somehow or other, it's floating in the ocean of air by Krishna's arrangement. And there's a... I won't go there. Anyway, in the fifth canto, there's a very amazing description of the universe. But that's another class, which is actually above my head. Fifth canto is... very difficult. Anyway, Prabhupada's point is these big planets are huge, heavy, and they're floating in the air. That's by Krishna's grace. By Krishna's grace that it's happening. And I supply the juice of life to all vegetables. Bhaja Govinda, right? He used to tell me that before coming to... he used to be a farmer in Bengal. And he told me that they grow according to the moon cycle. That's how they do the whole farming, is done by the moon cycle. So it was nice to hear confirmation that, yes, this is exactly what's going on. All right, final section of this chapter, which is... now, this part is one of my favorite parts of Bhagavad. I love this section. I love this section, so I'm fired up. All right, shall we continue? All right. So, final part of chapter 15, Yoga of the Supreme Person. Oh, what did I miss? Oh, I am the fire. Thank you very much. I am the fire of digestion in all bodies. Yes, even to eat, we need Krishna. If there's no fire of digestion... you're not going to eat. You can eat what you want, but it's not going anywhere. So you need the fire of digestion. And I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of foodstuff. So therefore, we always pray to Krishna before eating. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Rama Hare Ram. And you get points for pointing out that I skipped. Very good. All right, so now we get to one of my favorite sections of the whole Bhagavad Gita. Yoga of the Supreme... text number. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Top five verses of Bhagavad Gita right here. This one you should know. Savasya chaham hridi sannivishta matak smatir gyanam apohanangcha vedaischa sarvair aham eva vedya vedantakrid vedavid eva chaham. Prabhupada quotes this verse time and time and time again. That's how you learn these verses. And that's how you learn which ones are the most prominent. The ones that Prabhupada mentions in his classes, in his books, over and over. So then you get to know, I guess if he's repeated it for the 100th time, perhaps I should learn it. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So that's ludicrous to say, I remember. Krishna helped you to remember, not I. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. Whoa, there's a big statement. By all the Vedas, I am to be known. That's why Lord Chaitanya taught the Vedas are teaching only three things. What is your relationship with God? How to act in terms of that? And what is the goal of that relationship? Love of God. Lord Chaitanya teaches that is the only three things the Vedas are teaching. Who is God? How to act in that relationship? And what's the fruit? Love of God. Love of God is the goal of religion. Now we get to the real nitty-gritty. There are two classes of beings. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta. So that's who? Vyasadeva. Yes, it's Krishna, but he gave the credit to Vyasadeva, right? And I am the knower of the Vedas. Yeah, he's the knower of the Vedas because he created it. He should know. The manufacturer knows his product. Thank you, Nimites. Again, as you can see, I'm too excited here. I'm getting too transcendental. I'm telling you as I go along. Make notes while I go along. Anyway, if you want the top verses, didn't I send that to you? Top five, that can change. Okay. Send me an email. I'll pick out the top five for you. Okay? All right. There are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible. And in the spiritual world, every living entity is infallible. Well, I guess we're all in this together. Nobody has any recourse to be puffed up because to err is human, we say. I learned that in Our Lady of Loreto Catholic School. So it's true. Every living entity is fallible, makes mistakes. But, text number 17, besides these two, there is the greatest living personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord Himself. Krishna is so cool, talking about Himself as if He's somebody else. Instead of saying, me, Krishna said, yes, besides, there is the greatest living personality, the Supreme Soul, the imperishable Lord Himself. Yeah, that's you, Krishna, who has entered these three worlds and is maintaining them. Brahma creates, Shiva destroys, but Vishnu maintains. He's the maintainer of the universe. Janardhan, everyone say. Now, text number 18. Because I am transcendental, beyond both the fallible and the infallible. That is significant. You may become infallible when you go to the spiritual world, but you're not going to be above Krishna. Because I am transcendental beyond both the fallible and the infallible, and because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that Supreme Person. So he has revealed now. He was talking about himself. Now he says, that's me. As he said in chapter 7, There is no truth superior to me. Then in chapter 10, everything emanates from me. So many places Krishna said, I am supreme. Here he goes again. And because I am the greatest, I am celebrated both in the world and in the Vedas as that supreme person. The word is Purushottama. Everyone? Wasn't that your name in a previous lifetime? Yes. Beautiful name. Purushottama. Now comes text number 19, the very first verse I ever memorized as a devotee in 1973 on the subways of New York. This was the first verse. Whoever knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead without doubting, without doubting, is the knower of everything. So now I don't feel bad that I didn't get a college degree. I don't feel bad because, yes, I don't have any doubt that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That I have gotten, that's a gift from Guru and Krishna, and I pray I never lose it. My dear Lord, let me never lose this understanding that you are the Supreme Person. He therefore engages himself in full devotional service to me. In other words, your actions speak louder than words. In other words, people can say, oh, I believe in God, I love God. Good. Show it. Demonstrate it. A girl may be in America, a girl may be suited by different men, and they all tell her, oh, I love you. And she'll say, love me, show me the ring. Show me the ring. In other words, talk is cheap. Let's talk to my parents. Let's sign on the dotted line. And then we see who runs away. Right. Talk is cheap. So here Krishna is saying, if you actually know him, that he's God, the proof is you engage in full devotional service. Something we've been hearing every night. It's come up practically in every chapter. Full devotional service. Now look at text number 20. This is the most confidential part of the Vedic scriptures. So even if you haven't read all the Vedas, it doesn't matter. You have now read the most confidential part of the Vedas. That's why this Bhagavad Gita is so perfect. O sinless one, and it is now disclosed by me. Whoever understands this will become wise, and his endeavors will know perfection. So here is the secret of success, material or spiritual. Just know that Krishna is God without doubting. Engage in full devotional service. This is the real conclusion of the Vedas. You have now graduated. You now know the Vedas. But you have to have faith. So that if somebody challenges, no, Krishna says, and Krishna is the author of the Vedas, I don't need your approval or verification. You may say that I don't know Sanskrit, I have not read Rig Veda, this Veda, doesn't matter. Krishna is saying that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and if I accept that without doubting, he says I'm the knower of the Vedas. You got a problem? Take it up with Krishna. Otherwise, talk to the hand. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.